D4.
Number 12, B.
And then a sense of love here. Actually, the counterfeit, where darkness was all over the land, where Jesus said, my God, for this I was spared. And the weight of the temple was rent in twain, the earth did quake, the rocks rent, the graves were opened. You can just see how the whole world was shaken, how error rose up, and the whole crisis of materiality you could see there, and it just didn't touch him. Until finally, even the Roman centurion acknowledged, what did he say? He said, truly, this was the Son of God. Can you see all these three portions here of life, truth, and love as fulfillment? They're showing that first in life, Jesus was willing to give up his mortal sense of life completely. In truth, he let the whole gamut of error let loose on him to show that it can't touch the manhood and the factuality of manhood. And in love, he showed that this error just shakes itself so that universally all error is shaken up and it can't touch him. Then we have the same law all over in the face of really the oneness of being, where in life he shows he is risen. He is risen. The fulfillment of love as life, he is risen. In truth, they could see Jesus unchanged. The form, the factuality of the Son was untouched. And in love, the ascension and that sense where he said, all power is given unto me in heaven and on earth. I shall be with you always until the end of the world. A complete sense of highest fulfillment. So, again, we see that law of love in its fulfillment. So this is the symbolization of an individual, never-repeating case called Jesus Christ. The law remains eternally. The exemplification of it is individual, does never recur. If Jesus said, follow me, he meant not that we are going to lead the same life as he did, that we have to first to find an Abraham as a father, and a Joseph as a so-called father, and a Mary as a mother, and so on, and the devil who will tempt us. But he said, follow me, follow that law which he followed. And the law which he followed is this big law, as we see it today, as that law of interdependence, of life, truth, love, manifesting itself as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That's the law I was saying I would like you to culture and culture as much as you can. Because it's the law that really matters. And so, I feel I want to show you, and that's what you have on page 9, where I tried now to show that we should really use the Bible as a authority or as an example symbolizing a law. But once we have seen the law, we really could rise above the symbolization of the Bible and stay with the scientific laws and elaborate on the scientific law. Here I have tried to pinpoint it, namely I have given here Matthew again, first in the biblical symbolism as we had it before, and then in the second column we showed the metaphysical interpretation of the Bible story. How we can, instead of saying genealogy, we can say this is the parent mind. Instead of baptisms, we can say it's the metaphysical interpretation is purification. So in the second column, you have the metaphysical interpretation of biblical symbolisms. Just as Mrs. Eddy gives in the glossary the metaphysical interpretation, which is all to the spiritual origin. But, and here comes in the great point, this is not yet science. This is only interpretation. Science includes trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truths, and not just interpreting what has been said 2,000 and 2,500 years ago. Science must give laws, and therefore we should see from such a text, by induction from the text, what they mean. And so, because we know the synonymous terms, we can now transpose, so to say, the metaphysical interpretation into the scientific interpretation. We know very well that the parent mind is just one idea, characterizing the whole of mind. Characterizing mind. But mind is much bigger than just parent mind. Or you have as a second purification, and we know that purity is just an idea, one of the characteristics of spirit, but that spirit is much bigger than just the quality of purity and purification. And so with identity, that identity is indicating soul, interpretation is indicating principle, so that we can transpose the whole metaphysical interpretation now to the science and putting it into those super symbols, into the capitalized terms, which are the greatest symbols covering the greatest range of ideas, and put it right back into the synonymous terms. Can you see that? Whereas the metaphysical interpretation is specific. See, it only applies now to Matthew, to that one specific example, namely the life of Matthew. Whereas the metaphysical interpretation of Matthew is specific, if we put it back into the synonymous terms, we get a general interpretation. We make it general, universal. Instead of having an atomistic interpretation, because it's only one example, we get now a structural interpretation. What we have seen in that story is the structure of Matthew, and not so much all those nice little verses and so on which we have been considering, but the structure of it, the pith of it. And instead of just interpreting it, we can now, by putting it to super symbols, into science, we can now be creative. That's the great change. Christian scientists have always been just staying mostly with interpretation, interpreting the Bible, interpreting the textbook. They had nearly a fear of being creative, of being self-revelatory. They had a horror of being a revelator, because they felt the only revelation there is the revelation of Mrs. Eddy, and there is no more revelation. That was the last revelation, and from there on, God is dead. Whereas if God is being, he must reveal itself continually and in always new forms, but always on the same principle. So here, by transposing it into science, we make the whole law of Matthew a scientific law, a general scientific law, which we can use in the most creative way. Now, this is the method that is used in every science. And that's why I have showed you on that same page a funny picture, which you may wonder what it is what it is meant with it. I just took this picture here, you see, to show how in any other science we arrive at laws. Here it is, a nice tree and an apple. That's the apple of Newton. Newton's apple falling on his head. And falling on his head, he begins to think. And he begins to think, why does that apple hurt me? And why does it fall down? And with what speed does it fall down? And so on. And so he begins to investigate gravitation. Well, this is what happened with this tree and this apple to Newton. But the law of gravitation can also be symbolized, say, with the Tower of Pisa. They went out of the Tower of Pisa and let the a stone down, they could rightly measure the weight of the stone, the height of the tower, could measure exactly the time it took, and so on, and in this way symbolize again the law of gravitation. Or you have another symbol of the law of gravitation. You have the Earth and you have the Moon, and you know when the Moon is opposite of the Earth, it attracts the water, and you have the, what you have here, you say the tides, you see, high tide, and on the other side you have low tide. It's the gravitation of the mass of the Moon on the Earth. Well, what I want to show, that this tree doesn't seem to have anything to do with this Earth and this Moon here. They are completely different phenomena. Or they are a completely different phenomena than this Tower of Pisa and that stone. The phenomena are completely different. But the law behind it is the same. The law behind it is actually the same. It's namely the law of gravitation. And that law of gravitation we don't need to express through trees and apples, nor do we need to express the law of gravitation in terms of stones or of moons and of tides, but with abstract symbols which are so exact and so all abound, so big, that they cover every incidence, every phenomena of gravitation. And so Newton was taking all these symbolization together and put it into this formula, that the force that is of gravitation is just the gravitational constant multiplied by the mass 1 and the mass 2. That's the mass 1 and the mass 2. You say mass or mass? Mass. Mass 1, mass 2, divided by the square of the distance between those two masses. That's R, R square. Now, with this formula, you can calculate any incidence of gravitation. Millions of instances, billions of instances of gravitation can just be put back into this simple formula. And it's always this formula. What I want to show, therefore, is that instead of having the days of creation, symbol of the law of interdependence, or having the symbol of Matthew as the same law of interdependence, so the language is different, the picture is completely different, we really should be, as scientists, be able to get to that formula and say what we want is not the pictures and not the billions possibilities of how to symbolize it, but the underlying law. And so the underlying law is when we see that life, truth, and love is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. It's as simple as that. If we have that, then we have found, really, the scientific law. Then we have not found the law of the days of creation, because the days of creation are only an example of that law. We have not found Matthew, which is only one example of that law. Then we have found the law itself. And if we have found the law itself, then we can apply it creatively to infinite situations without having any precedence for that situation, because the infinite never repeats itself, and so we will have no precedent for that situation. And so we become creative. We can now, therefore, apply this law creatively. And that's what you have on page 10. You see? Up there, we have now the scientific law. It's no more Matthew's law or Matthew's illustration of the law. Now we have just a skeleton, just a structure of that law here on the left-hand side. We have just that scientific law as showing what I said before. You see, that what we can culture ourselves in is that life, truth, and love is mind. And on the left-hand side, you have this scientific law stated just as a law. As I said it before, life, truth, and love is mind. You see, therefore, life, truth, and love is the impulsion of mind. Truth is the factuality of mind. Love is the completeness of mind. Now, I said, if we have the fundamental law, then we can elaborate that. We can be creative because we know that mind means a lot. That mind means all of the ideas of mind. And so in the second column, where I have written the elaboration, you see, you find just for every synonymous term, just four or five ideas. Naturally, there are only a selection of those ideas. But just to illustrate it, an idea of mind could be power. Power. You see, the days of creation took light as mind. The Matthew took genealogy, or the parent mind, as an illustration. But we know that mind has many ideas characterizing mind, like, for instance, power. So I can see at that point, perhaps in my experience, I'm at the point where I need to see the right sense of power. So instead of saying mind is power, not mortal mind is power, but mind is power, I say, all right, mind is power. But who says that mind is power? Who makes that mind manifest itself? It's the impact of life, truth, and love as power. That says, as life, I impel power. Truth says, I make that power factual and right. And love says, I make that power to be fulfilled so that it cannot be distorted. It will happen. It will be successful power. Can you see how I can now, if I know my synonymous terms, the ideas, how I can use now this law of interdependence in infinite ways and yet stick to the same law? Gosh, if you can understand what I said in these few minutes, now, golly, I'm grateful for you, because that's what we have to do. To get away from interpreting and interpreting endlessly and endlessly and endlessly. Let's be scientists. Let's go forward. Let's be creative and think in a new way. But let's think in a scientific way and not in a haphazard way, in a random way, just mystical. Here you can think always anew and anew and yet stay within the one law, the one great law of interdependence. For instance, take in principle harmony here. Well, we can say principle is harmony. Principle establishes harmony. Principle only knows harmony. Wonderful, wonderful. But who is going to do it? But if in our consciousness we see life impels principle to bring forth harmony, and truth comes and says to that harmony, I give to that harmony the right form of harmony, not just any old harmony, but the right form of harmony. And love says, and I give to that right form of harmony as such a completeness that it is just fulfilled, just right, just what is needed. And so, if you can, like other people have told me since I have taught this law, they go to their office in the morning and walk down half an hour, and what they do, they just go through that wonderful law and say, what is going on in the world? What's going on in the business? What is going on with me anyway? Only that one great law where life, truth, and love impel mind, impel spirit, impel soul, impel principle, impel life, truth, and love. And you just get into that rhythm of that law and you feel that covers anything what we have to do. So on this one law, you could stay for half a year, for a year, for 2 years, until the end of the world. Because it's one great law. And the more we are consciously aware and just hear the rhythm and the tone and the harmony of it, the more it becomes us, and becomes innate within us. So I can quickly go to the next page, last page 11. I said, science gives us trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truths. Science doesn't give us just laws that are static and repetitive. They are so that if we are able to stay within definite classifications, that we have infinite varieties. For instance, here I can show you how this law of life, truth, and love, which we have seen is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, as we had before in the word aspect, how we can enlarge that. We can see, we could give to this law a pinch of the Christ. Just a little pinch of, can you say a pinch of the Christ, you know? And the Christ says, namely, I'm Emmanuel. I'm God with me. And so I begin to take the very same law as before, but I just put a little bit more to it, that pinch of the Christ, and say, that's my spirit. That's my mind, my spirit, my soul, my principle, my truth, my love. In other words, I begin to see, what is my mind? What is my spirit? What is my soul? If we leave it at Christian Science, they say, God is your mind. God is your spirit. God is your soul. Who is God? Nothing, nobody. There is only life, truth, and love. So life, truth, and love is my mind. Can you hear what? Can you hear what's going on? The moment you say that, you feel that that impersonal or suprapersonal principle of life, truth, and love is making me mind, is therefore my mind, therefore is impelling my mind, therefore is forming my mind, and as love is fulfilling my mind. Can you hear that something much more powerful is happening than if I say God Almighty is my mind? Who is God Almighty anyway? But here I put it right into absolute Christian Science and see life, truth, and love is my mind. And then I can go through that and put a little bit of Christianity in it. Christianity is always that, really, which destroys its opposite. And so I can go through the whole list again and can see life, truth, and love is not only my mind, but is annihilating its opposite, mortal mind. Therefore, I begin to feel here that it is that I don't have to destroy mortal mind, that not even the divine mind has to destroy mortal mind, because I don't know quite how that happens. But if I feel that the life impulsion is bringing forth my mind, and therefore I see that the life impulsion impels mortal mind to disappear, that truth impels mortal mind to destroy itself, and that love impels mortal mind to give itself up. And so I can see how this whole consciousness is further elaborated as that law which takes care of its opposite. Can you see that? Or you can go on to the last one, to, I didn't have room on this one, so it's here, to the science aspect, and see, after all, I can see that there is only one, the only mind. And I begin to see life, truth, and love is the only mind. Therefore, there cannot be any other mind. And so I begin to see that life impels that mind to be the only mind. That truth acknowledges that only mind to be the only mind. And that love fulfills in consciousness mind as the only mind. Gosh, you get a completely different sense of all this. And you see, I only operate with capitalized terms. But the moment we know how to relate them, then we have big laws. And we don't have just small laws and just one law, but through the categories and combining of the categories, this law just explodes infinitely to a terrific sense. This is science, though you can't read it just this way in the Bible or in the textbook. And yet it is the core of the Bible and the core of the textbook. But taken out of the symbolism of the Bible and of the language of the textbook and put it right back into the language of law.